Looks like a better Sunday today. Last weekend, anybody that heard my voice like, oh, Devon, what's wrong with you? It's still the best show in the whole of the universe. It's New Season of Sports. We don't have so much to talk about today, but we have a whole lot to talk about in the NBA and, of course, a whole lot in football concerning the transfer window. It's transfer world right now. Summer is here. That's beckon on us already. We are seeing a little bit of move here and there. So much rumor to go around. And the guy that said he will look for another job if he ever buys a £100 million player. Looks like he just agreed one a couple of days ago. I have with me today. Oh, the show is hearing, of course, on Obed Radio Scope, on our podcast, on YouTube, on Apple Podcasts, and of course, Spotify. I have on the show today with me, I have Olawale with me, and of course, I have not so much Araku Kachi anymore. I'll let you guys introduce yourselves.
Around the world.
Okay, always a pleasure to be
here. Welcome to the show. It's great to be here. It's great to be here today. Last week, people did a one-man show last week. And it wasn't really that good, but thank God we are all back.
I'm going to chip in there.
Over to you,
I'm going to chip in there, sports fans. Always a pleasure to be here and share the day with you wherever and however you get to enjoy our show. Not only did we miss Debo, I think we also missed you, our fans. If everything had worked the way it was supposed to work, last week Friday should have been the start of the 2022 FIFA World Cup. But now the World Cup has been pushed back another 163 days. We can't wait for that to start in Qatar. We thought Ferrari has also overcome his engine failure demons, but we thought wrong. And concerning Oracle Kachi, I'm just saving up my oracle-ness for the World Cup. Stay tuned for a great show.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much, Kachi, for that. And of course, we'll start with the NBA. What do I want to say about the NBA? I don't agree with Olaale in any way, form or fashion. Let it be known. Let it be known right now before I even start talking. So when you see us fight, you will understand where I'm coming from. I feel the Celtics have not done pretty well. Considering what I perceive to be a one-man show by the Golden State Warriors. And the Celtics being the best team defensively, at least from what we've seen. Physical, tactical, and of course, they have all the youthful energy. And don't forget, they became the first team since the chair of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and the rest in their 20s to score at least 20 points in a game. The trio of Marcus Smart, Jason Tatum, and of course, Jaylen Brown. Olaale, I'm going to start with you. I don't agree with you in any way, form, or fashion. But you made a salient point considering the fact that we can't compare the Golden State Warriors with the Brooklyn Nets in terms of play. But we can compare the Celtics with their play defensively. And from the look of things, I know people like to overthink things. I don't like to. They have a particular guy that drops all the points for them. It's Steph Curry. Steph Curry is not a god. He can be defended against. Even if you drop the performance of Steph Curry by defending properly against him, they have the best defender in the whole of the league in Marcus Smart, for crying out loud. And this is the guy that by fourth quarter has just three fouls. And he's defending pretty well. He did it in game one, showing who the master is. Against Wigan could not drop a single point. Clay, defending against Clay could not drop a single point. All his defensive approach towards all these guys, only Steph dropped 6 points. And I'm wondering, if this is the approach of the Golden State Warriors, why don't you just defend Steph Curry out? It's undefendable. Let me bring this straightforward about that. But of course, you can make him drop those points. Instead of scoring 43 points, he might end up with 30 or 35 points or even less. And that takes away the fact that the other guy, the supporting cast, quote and unquote, would not be able to balance the sheet like in accounting. They won't be able to balance it. And that means the Celtics can actually win. But I know you have a difference of opinion, and I want you to sound that opinion today to our fans. Olari.
Yes. For me, I think the Celtics have performed well in this series because if they've not performed well, I'm not sure the series will be 2-2 at this stage. Probably it's going to be 3-1 Golden State Warrior or a sweep for the Golden State Warrior. The Dallas Mavericks, as much as we might not like them, it ended 4-1. The Grizzlies, with all their top guys, ended 4-1. And what do you call it? The Denver Nuggets ended 4-1. This is the Celtics series, and it is 2-2. So I think they've done well. I think we are probably either underestimating, or either is it underestimating, or probably we are. Or the standard at which we are expecting from the Golden State Warriors is a bit too high, because they've actually done very well. I don't want to agree with you with the your submission that it's been a one-man show for the Golden State Warriors. Beyond that, the Golden State Warriors, if you take away game one, that they allowed the Celtics to score 120 points, and the game three, Warriors, in the two games they've won, they've limited the Celtics to below 100 points in the two games they've won. That points at one particular thing. Defensively, they are very good. I think these two teams are very good defensive teams. These two teams have won two games which they have been the better, being the better team. I will now take you back to game three, where that the Warriors lost. In the game three that the Warriors lost, Andrew Wiggins had 18 points, Klay Thompson had 25 points, Jordan Poole probably had 10 points. You can't even say that is not, you can't call that a one-man show. 25 points from Klay Thompson and 18 from Andy Wiggins. It's not a one-man show. For me, this has been a balanced, series. What I was expecting going to this series was for the Celtics to win one of the two games at the Bay area, which they did. I expected Golden State Warriors to snatch one game from at the Garden, which they've eventually done. So what is going to happen going forward in the next three games now? So far, so good. I think we've not seen that superstar performance from Jayson Tatum. In game one, it was no show at all. It was Al Horford and Jaylen Brown that carried the Celtics to the victory. It was okay in game two, in which they lost. It did well in game three. Game four, average. But we have not seen that superstar performance from me. We've seen one from, we've seen probably two from Steph Curry, but an exceptional one in game four. So I think for the Celtics, for them to win this series, it's going to boil down to Jayson Tatum proving to us that he is actually that superstar everybody thinks he is. And another thing I think we need to probably take note going forward is this. The Celtics, for all their heroics in terms of defensive play and offensive play, they struggle in tight game situation. When games are 2-3 points different, in the regular season, they are one of the worst teams in close games. So, which means they struggle with their decision making when games are very close down the stretch. And if there was a game in this series that looks very close down the stretch, it was game four.
Yeah.
And you could really, what you noticed in that game was that their decision making was a bit questionable. They were jacking up the threes when it was not falling. They couldn't really get to the paint like they did easily in game one, even game two and game three. So for me, my two main concerns for the Celtics going forward is Jason Tatum performer, is he going to show up? And their decision making, how do they take care of the ball when we have it, when you have a close game situation going down the stretch, last 3-4 minutes of the game? Because if we go by the stats, which is not looking good at all on the part of the Celtics, and you expect at least one of or two of these games to be very close. I'm not sure any of this game is going to be a blowout, encounter. This is where I think I'm giving the Warriors a bit of advantage. Where I can give Celtics a bit of advantage on the other hand is this. In the playoffs so far this season, they've not lost two consecutive games. So we might be expecting a bit of a bounce back, a bit of reaction from them in game five. And when you think that, I think in the Milwaukee series, after they won game four, when they lost game five, when everybody expected Milwaukee to close the series in game six, they turn up, they won game six in Milwaukee, and they eventually won game seven. In the Miami series, when they were expected to close the series in game six, they lost. And when everybody felt like, well, Miami was going to win game seven, they showed up. So they are a very resilient team who tends to react very well to adversity and bad results. So it's going to be an interesting game five, because something tells me this series is not going to go to seven like most people predict. I believe one of these two teams is going to win game five and game six. And whoever show up on that day, whoever can probably limit his own mistakes. And because both teams have proven that they are very good when it comes defensively. For Golden State Warriors, are they going to get production from Klay Thompson? I think Andrew Wiggins have done very well so far in this series. Offensively, he has given them what they were not expecting. It boils down to Jordan Poole and Thompson. If those two guys will show up, I think the Golden State Warriors are going to win this series in six.
All right, perfect. Kachi, I know you asked us this question pre-program, so I'm going to throw the question right back at you. Who are going to be the top five under pressure players going to game five? That will be under the most pressure. From both teams.
Yeah. Thanks. Thank you, Debo. And I think this is really important as we consider it, because each of the person on my list coming to, if they play to their potential or coach to their potential, the game, the series will flip. The first person that I think is most under pressure for me is Jason Tatum. Right now, if I did everything, Jason Tatum is reminding me of Steph Curry during their first championship run in 2015, where out of the blues, Andre Iguodala was voted as Finals MVP, simply because the supposed best player on that roster did not have a career-defining or a Finals-defining game in the series, or even a career, their finals defining series. Tatum right now, either he struggles with shot making and then jacks up his assist, which was what we saw in game one, or he gets you pretty decent 27, 28 points, but racks up close to 6 turnovers that leads to 12 points for the Golden State Warriors. His shot making / assist passing has to come together. The last three games, Tatum needs to show us that this is the guy that carried the Celtics in the conference semifinals against the Milwaukee Bucks. Because as Olamide alluded to, we thought the Bucks were going to close them out in game six. That was when Tatum gave us a playoff defining game, 46-9, I believe, that staved up the box, and ultimately they were able to close out the series in game seven. Right now, this was the same argument people had, critics had against Steph Curry. But judging by what we saw in game four, yeah, I think Steph has already shown that he can elevate his game to that level. Yep. The pressure now is on Tatum, especially playing away from home, to do the same thing Steph did. Because, yes, they said it's Silicon Valley, it's a city of millionaires, and they don't have rabid fans like the Boston Celtics do. Trust me, game five, the fans will be toxic. They will throw jives, they will swear, they will curse. But Tatum needs to rise above it.
Nobody likes it in Toronto, though.
He has to do that in Oakland. So I believe the most person under pressure is Jason Tatum. And similar to what Olawale said, even though he puts Steve Kerr as number one in his own, I think the second person under the most pressure is the Golden State Warrior coach, Steve Kerr. I believe right now, Kerr has a slight crisis because he has someone who is almost larger than life in his team, and that is Draymond Green. Draymond is the emotional leader of that team. But right now, and I will get to that later, so I'll probably not expose my hand, but right now, Draymond is not entirely focused on the finals. Draymond instead is focused on making
on his
sure
podcast. On his podcast.
People get his podcast. In fact, I heard someone say that Draymond Green would win MVP for the podcast in this final. So the pressure now is on Kerr to manage that. First of all, manage his time, the number of minutes he plays, because like I said, he's the emotional leader. So if he's not in power,
whatever that means, Kachi.
What it means is this. He's the one that turns away bullies. Because right now, in the finals, the referees swallow their whistle. They don't call all the fouls. They allow the teams get physical. So all those Silicon Valley boys, Jordan Poole, Andrew Wiggins, Gary Payton Jr., that play finesse basketball, when they face a very physical Celtics team and there's nobody on their side that they can look to say, this guy bullied me here. When he comes back driving to the paint, you need to shove him hard. Draymond is the person that lets the opposing team think twice before committing a flagrant foul because they know that there's somebody that will back up their team, right? Okay. So it gives them, in Nigeria, we say it gives them that ginger. However, that ginger can only come if Draymond is on the court.
Roy Keane.
he is the Roy Keane or Patrick Vieira of that team.
Don't put my
Nemanja Vidic of that team. Let me put it that way. That means he may not be the most talented, but because of him, people will go to war for him.
Kachi is talentless.
He's talented. I'm gonna get there. Let me move on. The third person under the most pressure is Draymond Green, right? For Draymond Green's career, he averages 9.8 rebounds and 5.4 assists. That's his career average. Right now, in the final.
Did you say 9 points?
Yeah. Draymond averages 9.8 rebounds, 8 rebounds, 5 assists. That is for over 658 career games.
Wow. He steals for a living.
So right now, Draymond is averaging a triple single, which is he's probably doing 2 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists a game in this final series. And somebody told me he's going to triple single himself into the Basketball Hall of Fame. He's a champion without a doubt. However, he needs to play up to his career average. Because you can't foul out, and that is a serious thing. Notice this, the two games the Warriors have won are the two games Draymond has not fouled out in. The two games he has fouled out in, the Warriors have lost it. So it tells me Draymond must not get into foul trouble. And two, he has to, at the very least, play up to his career average. To give the Warriors a chance. Wow. So this is the third one. The fourth one is Klay Thompson. Klay has, I believe, lost a step or two since losing 2.5 years sitting on the doctor's operating table.
Mm-hmm.
We expect that from him.
Yeah.
However, he's shown glimpses during the course of this playoff that there is a game six clay in him. The Warriors, if they want to potentially win, especially knowing that the Boston Celtics are 18-0 coming back from a loss. I mean, like Olawale said, they've not lost back-to-back. And this is dating since January, not even just only in the playoff. They've not lost back-to-back games. So, Clay cannot keep his one good game till game six. It has to be tomorrow's game. And if he does not bring his game and the Celtics grab game five, if they follow that law of average, it means that Celtics will grab game seven. They will grab game five, lose game six, and grab game seven. That's what I'm saying. And it's actually much more painful when you lose a final championship on your home court, as the Cleveland Cavaliers, as the Golden State Warriors. They know what it means. So Clay, a game six Clay has to become game five. It has to become game five Clay. And the last person, and it's only because I need to put someone on that list, because I personally believe that right now, if the Celtics win it, Jaylen Brown will be my own finals MVP. But I'm putting Jaylen Brown on that list simply because he needs to maintain that level he's currently playing at. He cannot have a dip in performance, especially because we don't know what we'll get from Jason Tatum. So Marcus Smart will be Marcus Smart. Al Horford at 35 going on 36 has probably given you his best game one. So Jaylen Brown has to be consistent. Honorable mention to Derek White, his three-point shooting has to improve.
Wow.
Because it is the finals, he has to shoot above at least 40% from the three. But those are my five lists. Those are the five men on my list. But without a doubt, Jason Tatum has to play like the face of a franchise. He doesn't have that yet in his finals.
All right, perfect. Olale, what about you? Don't let's waste so much time of basketball.
I won't take much of your time. I think the first person to have to be Steve Kerr. Yeah, because he has a decision in front of him that I don't think he wants to take at the time now. Draymond Green has been very terrible in this series. He has to make a decision about his managing his time. Does he give Kaminga and those other young guys more minutes? How does he affect the team? Because like Aki said, he's the emotional leader of this team. If he's not in the right state, how does he rub on the other parts of the other players in the team? So that is a very key decision for him, especially towards the end of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Offensively, defensively. There was a point in time in game four when Golden State was going to attack. He has to pull out Draymond Green. Immediately, there was a timeout. He needs to quickly bring it back for defensive. So, he has a bit of decision to make about Draymond Green. Okay. I think number two is Steph Curry. He has a career-defying finals performance. He needs to follow it up. That shouldn't be a fluke. He needs to, I'm not saying he should score for 3 points. He needs to probably do something about 30 points, like 8 assists, and with a win in game five, so that his critics will not go back to say that was just a flash in the pan. So I think Steph is the second person under pressure. The third person is Klay Thompson. Klay Thompson is averaging 17 points in this series. That should not be the case. So I is supposed to be the Warriors' second option in terms of in terms of scoring. He has not showed up. 17 points average of 17 points might not do it in the next two games, because Steph needs support. Steph needs somebody to put in 20-something points, considering the fact that Jordan Poole point has dropped from the 20-something points he had in the first two series of this playoff down to like 10, 11 points. So to cover for that, this thing, Klay Thompson will have to increase his production. The fourth person for me, I think, is Jason Tatum. He has not showed up in this series at all. If Jason Tatum has actually played as a superstar, most people are clamoring, or most people think he is now, the Celtics should be 3-1 ahead, because Celtics as a team has performed very well. Smart has smart product, smart has giving them good production. Derek White has giving them decent production. Al Horford has given them production in some games. So, as a superstar, you can't afford to be picking games where you are going to show up. You have to show up in every game. That is what is expected of you. And he has not done that so far this series. If the Celtics are to win the NBA today, Jaylen Brown is going to be the MVP, Finals MVP, not Jason Tatum. I think now the fifth person is Draymond Green himself. He needs to redeem himself. For a guy that most people are tipped to be, to go into basketball Hall of Fame, I know he's a point forward. He does a lot of things.
He will.
He does a lot of good things for this team. Forget about his point average. His playmaking is one of the reasons why the Golden State Warriors could play the motion offense. That means Steph Curry most times doesn't handle the ball a lot. Draymond Green pushes the ball forward most times. He acts more as the playmaker of the team. So that they need that Draymond Green back. Not about even the points, the assist and defense. So I think four out of the five people most under pressure for me are from the Golden State Warriors.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much, Olawale. But before we go, I have one thing to say to you guys about this, your Draymond Green. I understand you. I'm not saying I'm competing in your basketball knowledge or level, 100%. But this, your Draymond Green, and is being an emotional leader. Even Roy King, that I said, is not a good footballer. My God, my word, that guy is the most. Lion would say, he steals for a living. That guy cannot even shoot two-pointer. Honestly, it's abysmal, if you ask me. I don't know him from 10 years ago. I wouldn't lie. Maybe there was a very good Draymond Green like 5-6 years ago or 7 years ago. I wouldn't argue about that. But what I see day in, day out, from the start of this series, of the playoffs, across the season, I don't understand. I actually understand a little bit what he said he brings to the side, emotional side. Like, he protects the team, right? Yeah. But I'm pretty sure someone else can do that. You can protect the team.
Right now?
You can protect the team at the same time. Have at least, I can imagine, you're talking about someone that he started to be a Hall of Famer in the long run with a career average of 9 points. My word, that is
I just want to make a reference.
Okay.
The Hall of Famer, the guy who was I can't seem to remember his name, the friend of Kim Jong-un from the Chicago Bulls, Dennis Rodman, once had a career statistics. He once had a career statistics of 0.25 rebounds. So sometimes it's your performance or your output may not necessarily be in the number of points, but in how you make the other guys that play with you
and honestly, you can you put your hand on your right chest and say Dennis Rodman supposed to be a Hall of Famer, or the is he on the
of course,
or is,
of
he course. On the, is he on the top 75?
Yes, and
you put your hand.
Yes,
I've lost all respect
yes,
for you. From
no,
the
no, you
I've
can,
lost,
you
lost
see,
all respect
scoring,
for you.
Scoring, I mean, rebounding is almost as important as scoring.
Yeah,
because if you can protect that paint or crash the offensive board when your players miss an open three, and you get it and dish
even
back.
Even Dennis Rodman have a double figure for the rebound.
Yeah.
Mugi does as single for all. And we're talking about playmaking.
No,
okay.
No. What to bring him in there really is the three championship. Because I understand what you're saying. Draymond is like the guy with minimum effort on a group project, but scores an A with the rest of the group.
Thank you.
Will still give him his A.
Thank you. Thank
I'm
you
not
very
saying
much. What you said now is just apt. It's very apt. Very apt. It sounds like I compared Draymond Green with Grant Williams of the Celtic, the Boston, mm-hmm. the Celtic. I watch him every night, and I'm like, what does this guy bring to the team? I don't understand. Maybe I'll ask after the show. We don't want to talk about that right now. And to a very sad one, Simiso Bulezi. The South African boxer was hit pretty bad, and he was actually was leading before he started fighting against the hair, and he was rushed to the hospital, and unfortunately he lost his life. I don't know. I'm a sport analyst. I'm supposed to be a sport analyst. I'm not supposed to speak against any sport. But honestly, if you are beyond 30 years old, boxing is not for you. Just go home. Whatever you've made, just make do with it. And don't lie about your age. If you are 22 or 32, just say it so people understand the level you are at right now. Honestly, I feel bad. I feel sad that this kind of thing would not stop. We are still going to have something like this pretty soon. It's not going to stop. Olale, Kachi, I'm going to show this question to you guys. I have just 2 minutes before we go on a quick break, so I want you guys to be fast about it. What can we do to avert these kind of things? I know it's difficult.
I personally think that there should be, especially when you get to the age of 30, there should be psychiatric and psychological assessments before every fight you go into. This is just to assess where you are, mentally. Sometimes these players get concussed and we don't know because they don't have that clear-cut sign of concussion. The physical evidences of concussion, but there are some psychometric KPIs that can be used to assess where they are mentally. I think that's what the organizing bodies have to bring into it. But I'm saying all this with my tongue in cheek, knowing that in every sport there is the element of risk. I mean, we've lost players, Mark Givenchy, God continue to rest his soul. We almost lost Christian Eriksen in a sport that is not even half as dangerous as boxing to a cardiac incident. So some of these things are, you might put the best medical care in place and risk will still happen. It still doesn't make the sport bad. Instead, it just makes us be more careful. And another perspective, a non-sport related perspective, in spite of all the air mishaps we've been having, air travels is still one of the safest means of transportation. So it lets you know that in everything, life on its own is a risk. We're sitting here, you never know, the roof may cave in on you. So if you now use that not to pursue your dream simply because there is an inherent risk, then the life is not worth living. I still agree with you that yes, we can put checks in place, especially as boxers get older, to ensure that they are entering the rings in the best shape of mind, physically and mentally. But that does not mean the risk will never end. The risk will continue to be there.
Perfect. Thank you very much. I hope we will not see something like this in the nearest future, whether in the UFC or in the boxing. We'll go on a quick break right now. When we'll come back, Olawale, I'm going to be starting with the coach that said he would never buy a 100 million pound player. All right, perfect. To the football world, I like to call it the footballing world. I don't know. I said someone should correct me, but I've not seen anyone correct me yet. So back to the footballing world, what we have news flying around. Adolawale, you posted something in the group where it was about Darwin Núñez was about to be signed to Brighton and Hove for I think a messy £25 million. Sometime last summer, and suddenly this guy, over the course of one season, became a Liverpool standard player, going for €100 million. And people said, 10 years ago, this would have gotten you a Cristiano Ronaldo, and this year, all €100 million can get you is a Darwin Núñez. It's almost irreconcilable. We've seen this guy playing Benfica, not even in the top five leagues in Europe, not even in France, not even in Germany. and he's going for 100 million. I know things don't come cheap. Players don't come cheap, especially when I'm coming from Portugal or Monaco. But what does this say about Jurgen Klopp? That was clamoring. I would never buy on £100 million player. Mm-hmm. Is seeing the reality of the craziness in the market, or just a panic because Salah and Mane are not going to, they're not willing to sign an extension?
I think beyond that, life generally, with the few years we've probably spent on it, we've learned not to overreact to things. We've learned not to make some, I will never do this, never do that, because it is life. Life happens every now and then. Mm-hmm. Alan Smith, when he was at Leeds United, said the last team he ever signed for in his entire life is Manchester United. He ended up playing in Manchester United. So we've seen players who have said they will never do so play under some kind of coaches. So in life, one thing in life you should never do is never make such vow like, I will never do this. Jurgen Klopp was probably there in 5 years or 5 years ago, he was probably talking from the point of a manager who is not, what do you call it, who doesn't have access to
that
free
kind
money.
Of fun.
Exactly. I'm sure if Pep Guardiola has, perhaps if he has never coached a team like City before, I'm sure he's going to be the biggest critic of Man City about the way they are spoiling football or something. So, with human being, we always say that. But beyond Jurgen Klopp himself, focusing on the player in question and the transfer, I think this could be the first Jurgen Klopp signing that will be probably under scrutiny. I don't think any of the signings have been, even the Van Dijk that cost that much and Alisson, I'm not sure anybody has really scrutinized their signing like that. And this will come because of two reasons. Number one, the amount involved is a bit crazy for a guy that some couple of months ago could have probably moved to Brighton for a fee in the region of £25 million. What has really changed about his production is what has really improved about his game to have probably warranted, let me say, a 80 something million in addition to his valuation. So I think that will bring a lot. And considering the fact that it's from their forward players in the past few years, Salah has been fantastic for the past 5 years, same as Sadio Mane. Then Diogo Jota, in his 2 years at Liverpool, has proven to be a capable starter or even backup. Same thing as Luis Diaz, who we've seen for 6 months. Not to talk about Roberto Firmino. So he will be under immense pressure to measure up to the standard of the guys he might likely is going to meet over there, because most of those guys have actually showed up. So it's not about him just scoring 5, 10, 15 goals. He has to be a consistent goal scorer. Mm-hmm. And how do you manage that with Salah being your first option? So I'm just looking at dynamics. I'm looking at how he's going to play out. And it's not like I probably have not seen much of his centre forward, and which we've not seen Liverpool play with such type of player. They've been used to Firmino, who is more of a playmaker in the number 9 role. So, like I said, I think it's going to be the first Liverpool signing that will be under scrutiny from the media.
All right, perfect. Kachi, before I ask you my question, so the boy basically is a 22-year-old boy. I can play as a left forward. He can play as a center forward, not as a striker. He can play as a first nine, and the statistics shows that playing as a center forward, he has managed to score 18 goals and gotten 3 assists. Playing as a second striker, out of the 8 games that he played as a second striker last season, he scored 6 goals with no assists. And playing as a left winger, like a left forward player, he played 5 games, scored 10 goals, and had 2 glorious assists. And over his career at Benfica, 84 games, scored 47 47 goals at Almeria, played 32 games, scored 16 goals, and Penara played 22 games and scored 4 goals. How much of scrutiny would this guy be under? Or are we going to see a protection? Because we see Jurgen Klopp protect his players. Someone like Naby Keita, when he first came, was not playing very well. Same thing with Thiago Alcantara. We expected him to hit the ground running. But he protected them for all season. Even Fabinho did not play very well when he first came to. And he moved for a pretty sum of money, maybe the 40 million region as well. You know, and Klopp was able to protect those guys until they hit the ground running the following season, and we see what they can do. Do you think there will be a replication of that from this guy?
I sincerely think it will happen, that will be the same case where Nunes is allowed to build confidence and adapt to the frenetic pace of English football or the Premier League. And I think the fans would also be patient simply because Liverpool has, in the last 5 years, been relatively successful playing the style of football they like, winning trophies, maybe not enough, but winning just about enough trophies to remain relevant. I think it would have been different if he was going to a club that desperately needs to win, like Manchester United. And this is not throwing jabs. This is pretty much saying that there will be lesser pressure now because Liverpool has enough better team depth to delay us seeing him coming immediately, with Naby Keita as well. And beyond all, from all these three, probably only Naby Keita has not played at his original level. Thiago has elevated this game. Fabinho is Fabinho. So I think because of the success and because we've seen Klopp blow it, except of course the young man comes in and just like Diaz took to the game and the league and the style of football like a dog takes to water. If that's the case, then it starts immediately. But otherwise, that's what I expect. Coming back to the transfer price, this tells me the vibe I'm getting from Liverpool spending this much is that they definitely expect one of the established front three to leave. And in this case, we know it's Sadio Mane. Well, I don't know if it will be two, but first,
for Firmino as well.
Well, we already know that Divock Origi has left, so that's one already. So I expect if Sadio Mane leaves, and for what they are getting, that's why we should probably not look at the actual signing fee, but the net spend because of what they will get from the transfer of those other two players I've mentioned before. I guess that's why the 100 million euros is not alarming right now. Also considering where we are in terms of global inflation. Otherwise, the uninflated price will probably be 65 million euros. But to your question again, I think he will be shielded until he's just about ready to hit the ground running. But from what he showed in the Champions League, it looks like a Liverpool player. But let's see how it goes. We really can't see that.
Perfect. Across last season, played 10 games in the Champions League and scored 6 goals. Means he's a player for the big occasion as well. Of course, a not so interesting one as well, but I would have to ask you guys questions about that as well. Is Tchouaméni, I'm pretty sure I did not pronounce his name very well.
Tchouaméni
of France are moving to Real Madrid for £85 billion. And you're wondering what exactly does he want to bring to the party that is different? You know, what does he want to bring to the party that is different from what they have right now? What difference will he have made instead of signing the guy, getting Paul Pogba for free and probably allowing the guy to run down his contract as usual? He has just 3 years left on his contract. Allow him to run his contract down to 1 year. Pay £36 million for him in the next year or in 2 years time. Let's say allow him to run down his contract. But of course, it's Real Madrid. They have 350 million war chest that they are interested in spending, so to speak, quote and unquote. But is it a waste of money not waiting for him and getting a Pogba for free? Or this is a very good step in the right direction, considering that Cruz will probably leave this summer Modric just signed a 1-year extension, but we know he probably will play just 50% of the games coming onward from next season. But does it give them that attacking bite that is so much great without Modric? Olaale, I'm going to start with you.
This is kind of a signing you call a risky signing because of it's young and it reminds me of the Paul Pogba signing. When you break the bank for players, you do it for game changers. The Galacticos era of the Galacticos era in Real Madrid, if you take a look at the kind of players they were breaking banks for, these are guys who could change the game. Luis Figo, Zinedine Zidane, Ronaldo da Lima. It's not just an Ibrahim Aguera. Ibrahim Aguera was called Mr. Versatile. But if you are going to bring in what Ibrahim Aguera is going to bring into a Real Madrid team, I don't think it's worth such a big amount. And considering the fact that, I don't know, is he going to play as a defensive midfielder? Does he want to play as a box-to-box? Is he going to be given time to adapt? Or is he going to get the ground running? So there is a lot of probably not to watch much about the guy, but again, I think the French too, they are learning how to hype their products just like the English do. So it's a bit risky. It could turn out to be a very good sign. And we've seen a couple of central midfielders rated as in highly rated coming out of France. I don't know whether you remember one guy called Manvilla or something like that.
Manvilla.
We've seen a lot of them highly rated, touted as the new Vieira, the new Oliver Dacor, this and that. But majority of them have not probably lived up to their potential. Even for Pogba, I think I should include him in that list. So, by and large, I think it's a risky signing, but you have to trust Madrid, a team that has won 4 Champions League in the last 7 years. Is it 7 seasons?
6 years.
You can't question them if they want to buy a player because, of course, can you win Champions League 4 in 6 or 7 seasons? If a team can do that and they want to sign a player for 100 million, you just have to respect them and have to assume that they know what they are doing.
Okay, so Olaale is sitting on the fence now. He's saying
it's
a risky signing, but we should trust Madrid given that they have.
I think that's just a jab on Madrid.
I missed the point. I'm sorry about that. Kachi, would you have signed this young dude? In the course of last season, had 50 appearances overall, 5 goals with some blaster included, and of course 3 assists in the minimum. Are they just signing another Casemiro for this amount?
I personally think it's a good signing because between Federico Valverde, Camavinga, and Tchouaméni now, Madrid invariably has secured his midfield triumphant for the next 12 to 15 years. Let's say 10 years being the most conservative, 15 years being the most optimistic. Mm-hmm. So he is not brought in to get goals. I mean, the people they are potentially going to replace are not known for their prolific goal scoring abilities as well. In Modric, Casemiro, and Cruz, they get you the odd 3-4 goals a season, but they dictate the pace of play. Bringing him in now to understudy those three guys for a year or two before they start to compete for slots, because they will get their games. They will definitely, he will play close to 40 games. He may not start more than 20, but he will play close to 40, 45 games. And he will be on the training ground with these guys. Sometimes it's all about picking their brains and adding to your game early enough when they are within earshot than having to say, oh, watch tapes of them. So I think that's really what Madrid has done. To say, okay, let's get our future in the building now. Because no matter what you want to say, for Pogba is he may come in for free, but it will be more expensive to maintain. He's an ego that would want to play immediately. And right now, you don't want to disrupt that midfield triumphant. You want players that will come, be satisfied with the amount of games they get simply because they know that the people in front of them are maestros and they can only get better watching them play and learning from them. So I think on that reason alone, Madrid has done good business. Yes, you can argue, I know, wait one more year. But we saw what waiting one more year has done to Liverpool. Who tells you that waiting one more year may not even make it go higher, especially being a World Cup year and Tchouaméni is fighting to make the team? What if they go and France, and invariably Tchouaméni has the fantastic World Cup tournament and ultimately adds 20 more million pounds or euros to his asking fee? So in terms of looking forward looking, it bodes well for the club, bodes well for the youngsters. He's going to play with Camavinga, who is his French teammate. He's going to play with an old head, in Benzema, who is also his French national football teammate. So everywhere I look at it, I see positivity. And that's really how I see the signing. I think it's a good signing. I'm not saying because he will hit the ground running, but because the people he will learn from are in the same building as he is right now.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much. And as it stands now, Arteta is biting his head off. He wants to make his signings early. The only signing Arsenal have managed to do is a particular Marquinhos, who they caught over with Wolverhampton because a young man signed a pre-contract with Wolverhampton, and Arsenal signed him afterwards for £2 million. And Gabriel Jesus has not been able to. Arsenal have not been able to finalize anything with Manchester City. They are looking at Chelsea that could potentially sweep up and sign the young dude ahead of Arsenal. Olale, sounds like sometimes we blame the coaches. I know I'm a very huge critic of Mikel Arteta anyways, but whatever it is that Arsenal is doing right now does not make any sense to me. For all signings, Arteta does not have, neither they do have a final say on those signings as long as it costs more than £30 million. They need to get a sign off from Josh Cochran or his father in the US to do all this kind of signing. And as it stands now, like I said, has rejoined Olympique Lyon. Eddie Nketiah, his contract is still balanced right now. We don't know if he's going to stay with Arsenal or he's not going to stay with Arsenal. Even if he does, he's probably going to be an only striker. And here we are. Arsenal know what they need. If they are gotten what they did in January, they probably will be in the Champions League and will not be taking so much about money. But here we are again in the summer. No activity at the start. No push for activity. No personal term agreement with these kind of players that you are looking forward to signing. Does it make so much sense? And should we put so much blame on the coaches if at the start of the season, Arsenal decide to flat out to the deceive again?
Now, Debo, I think both of us, we answered this question together because you made some interesting points. You said, because this reminds me of a typical corporate entity control system. Like you said, any signing above £30 million, we have to be... approved by Stan Kroenke or his son Josh. Now, that sounds very funny because that's more of a typical private sector. This thing, like, okay, the NBA has to sign off on any transfer, any expenses that is above so. This has to go through the board. But my major question now is, what basis do you think Josh and Stan Kroenke are going to use to assess any signing above that amount?
YouTube.
Is it from the footballing point of view, like the upside of the guy, the age, the number of years he has led, or do you just think it's just some very strange analysis that probably is just from the big guy? Like from a business point of view alone. So that's a bit worrisome for us now, because I think the challenge with us, majorly with Arsenal and Man United now, presently, is they have people who probably don't understand football making decisions for them. It's a very big challenge. It's not like I don't like the Americans. The Americans are good with their sports. They understand it. They understand their business environment. Football is quite different. The way it's something that you need to allow guys who understand football to. I think at times, Arsenal's issue is not even about the amount they want to spend on players. It's just the way they approach the transfer market. All these things now, by the time it remains 10 days, 15 days to the end of transfer market, they will not be running Etta Sketa. And you end up signing players for some ridiculous amounts that you shouldn't even spend initially. So I think there is, Arteta's hand are a bit tight. There is a limit at which you can put blames on him, even though I think it's still early days in the transfer window. But considering the fact that the season is going to start a bit earlier because of the World Cup break that is going to happen in December, and before you know it, it is already 12th of June. Probably by the time you get into July, you see the season almost in front of you. So I probably still want to give them a bit of time, but at least there should be motion in ground. There should be specifics about players we want to go for, these amounts we want to spend. There should be a bit of clarity, which I think is a bit missing now, and which probably is beyond the coach. And like you said, and where Arteta himself has to have some bit of blame is when you are in a team where you know getting players in is a bit of issue.
Problem.
You should learn how to manage your squad in terms of who is going out, because it's easier for you to say to let people go, but it's a problem for you getting even people that will give you their production. I'm not even talking about even getting people that are better. That's a specific problem with United at the moment. They seem to have people who are just all over the place, who don't really understand the way football should be run.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much. Kashi, I'm going to come to you now. Barcelona wants 100 million euros for Frankie de Jong. At first, we thought it was going to be 55 plus 10 million euros add-on. Later, they said 65 million with 10 million euros add-on. But now they are saying they want 100 million euros for Frankie de Jong. I'm pretty sure, I know the market is crazy, but I'm pretty sure that Frankie is not worth 100 million euros right now. But do you think this is a player that Manchester United needs in the middle of the pack? So much so to break the bank for, because United fans will argue that they have just £150 million to spend, and they should not be spending on just one player. They need to get a player. And the craziest thing, and Awali is guilty of this as well, they don't want to wait for the team to grow. At the same time, they don't want to spend big on just one player.
That's been deluded on part of some United fans. I saw that post yesterday. I'm just.
I totally don't know what to think. De Jong is a decent player, but if Nunes can go for 100 million, I guess he can also go for 100 million.
Oh, wow.
I mean, he did not flop in Barcelona. Yes, he also did not smell like roses, but I mean, he's played in a very tough Spanish environment and he held his own. Also because, United will be losing quite a number of their midfield from Pogba to Matic to Mata as well, and it's definitely a critical position to shore up and shore it up as quickly as possible. Let's remember that players will get more expensive after the World Cup. Some teams, if they have the capacity, and Barcelona is looking for money.
But in terms of whether it's right,
I don't understand. They need money. This is the same club that is now allowing people organize wedding ceremonies.
Oh, Kashi, you got it ahead of me. We can come and play by side.
Hey guys, so, yes, I hate you guys. Bye-bye.
What do you expect them to say? See people that are ready to pay, of course, we'll go for a certain amount. So it's a bad seller's market right now because midfield talents are not as much as they used to be. So if you have excess, then you control the market. It seems similar to buying the property right now in Canada. I'm sure you can attest to that, Debo. It's the seller that determines how not the buyer anymore right now. But coming back to a more serious note, is he a good fit? Is he a perfect fit? I may not know, but I think he will be a good fit. Simply because he's also from the Erik ten Hag school of football. He knows what ten Hag wants, you know. But United is a different pressure cooker. As Barcelona may be a bigger club, quote and unquote, but United is a global juggernaut. The pressure to perform. And he should just speak to his fellow Dutch guy who is very. What does it look like playing for United? I think he will be a good fit ultimately, but I can't say right now. It is too early to say he will be a perfect fit. But that's my take.
Before you leave that, I think I'm a bit interested in that topic. It's a bit tricky. Frankie de Jong is a talented midfielder. Is it worth the 100 million euros? It's a bit questionable.
No,
because
it's
like Kachi said, it wasn't a flop. It wasn't like it's looking more of like a luxury now for them. Like, because it seems Barcelona is the one pushing to sell him. Everything boils down to who is more desperate. If United are more desperate to have him, I think they might end up probably paying close to that. But if United if Barcelona are the one more desperate, I'm sure. By the time they get to close to their deadline, they might likely bring the price down. So it has to be between the two teams. Who is going to blink first? I think. I think Barcelona probably thinks United have that kind of money, and the truth is that I don't think United have money to spend. That's just it. Spending their limited budget on one big star and make noise. That's all.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much for that, Olaale. And Sadio Mane, we don't know where it's going to end up for the new season. Bayern Munich are not serious, starting with an opening bid of £25.5 million, which I think is irritating and very silly of them for a player of Mane's stature. Even if he has just 1 year left, this is the same team that cannot pay Sengen Abi more than £19 million. Euros in a year, but suddenly they want money and they want to play £25.5 million.
That's Bayern for you.
They're not ready to buy money, obviously. Maybe they can wait an extra year and allow money to boom for free to Bayern Munich, because that's what I'm going to do if I'm Klopp. They pay money just £100,000 every week, so that should not be a problem for Liverpool keeping him on for an additional extra year. And to our topic right now, it's going to be two. As a matter of fact, we have so many hot topics, but we have just 8 minutes left, so you guys will have to be a little bit fast about your analysis right now. Lewis Lewandowski, we all thought he's going to be going to Barcelona for £50 million. He already down tools, like, he doesn't want to play for Bayern Munich again. But right now, Chelsea has come into the foray. Of course, Manchester United as well coming, and PSG coming into the fore as well. That guy, come to us.
PSG.
Where do you think Leo should go to right now?
Unfortunately, let me quickly jump on this.
Yeah.
As much as Lewandowski, I'm actually surprised about his outburst about leaving Bayern. That was down to the fact that Bayern were openly romancing with Haaland at the point in time 2 seasons ago. Probably feel disrespected, but he has limited options. The Barcelona I wanted to join doesn't have the money, and even for Barcelona, you have Aubameyang, you want to join Lewandowski. I still don't understand that equation on one hand. Then who is available again? I'm not sure Madrid will be interested at this point in time. I'm not sure City has Haaland. Liverpool are looking at a different direction. Are you going to join Neymar's? Are you going to join Mbappe's team? Because they say it's going to decide on the coach. It's going to decide on the players that are going to stay. I, I don't know whether that project is interesting enough. Probably Chelsea looks as the best available decent option. And you know the history of Chelsea with strikers. I hope it ends well. So okay. I think things are a bit dicey for him. It's not looking good for him at all. He needs to be careful on his decision making.
Kashi, where will you prefer Lewe ending up for the new season?
I think I would like to see him play under Thomas Tuchel. Simply because he's a more intelligent player than Romelu Lukaku is. I think he would make those other fringe midfielders who look like they're
struggling. Actually, you've touched the ball where he doesn't like. Actually, you've touched the ball.
But it's true.
Simply because Lukaku and Timo Werner were not converting their chances. They made those midfielders.
Lukaku was not playing. Please, don't compare Lukaku with Timo Werner.
So I think the place where his impact will be almost immediately felt will be Chelsea.
Okay. But for real, realistically, I would have preferred Chelsea going for a player like Frankie De Jong instead of Manchester United. Yeah, honestly, I don't know, but of course, Titi knows because it's
almost going to be free. It's probably going to fall into Chelsea's lap. You mean
Lewandowski?
Yeah, Lewa. I'm not.
They want to sell Lewa for £50 million.
Which is still not bad. But though you have to consider
that one year left on his contract.
He's in his 30s.
No, he's not. I've been in for 30 million. And I've been in money for 25 million. Okay, continue. Bayern has been secretly giving catchy money.
No. All I'm saying is, let's say money is not an issue. Where do I think I see? 100%. I'd rather say, I think. It will probably be much more immediately felt in Chelsea. Manchester United.
But I just one thing. Chelsea, Lewandowski, be careful going to Chelsea. They have a bad history with strikers. Again, Gabriel, you've said it. Chelsea's problem is beyond the strikers. The style of play don't create enough chances. Yeah, he needs to worry about that.
100%. But the good thing about Lewa is that Lewa played under Pep Guardiola. Lewa plays like Harry Kane of today. A non-conventional nine. He's not a conventional nine again. He's not. Ale, to your brother that cannot speak Spanish and has been in Spain for close to 10 years. I'm not mentioning anybody's name. He said he's not going to Getafe. For sure. Kashi has the perfect destination for him. Do you agree with
Kashi?
Yeah.
I agree with him perfectly. Honestly, before Kashi made that submission, he probably asked me, where do I see Gary Bill? I probably don't have a clue. But again, that's an interesting... It's a win-win on both sides. Gary Bill is back in English football, back on the spot, under the spotlight. It's good for him to at least to get himself physically ready for the World Cup for Wales. And for Newcastle, an household name to kickstart their project. Yeah. These are the kind of players you need who can attract other kind of players along. And of course, we expect him to be more motivated. And we saw what he did at Spurs last season. He didn't start
so well
for them early part of the season, but towards the end of the season, when probably Jose Mourinho's and was forced to use him, he came up good. So of course, you expect him to be very productive for the Newcastle. So I think it's a
perfect win. And hopefully he's going to play less golf and concentrate more on football. Kachi, I want to come to you. At the point Zizou said, I'm a Marseillian. I'm not ever going to coach PSG. But looks like Mauricio Pochettino will be out of job pretty soon. I hope not. Nobody likes losing their job. But pretty soon, he might be out of job. And the front guy on the floor is Zizou. how do you think this is? I, if I'm a coach, I would never ever pass on the opportunity to coach Messi, even if it's just for one day. But how
we are talking about, we are talking about a Mbappe's team, not Messi's team.
But of course, how do you think Zidane will be able to massage the ego of this guy? And like I already said, Mbappe's team, he has too much power. 1 minute.
Zidane has done it before. I mean, he took a team filled with egos to win 3 straight Champions League. So he learned from Don Carlo Ancelotti. He can do it, but I need to temper expectations because his agency came out last night to say there has been no contact from PSG. However, it's looking very likely. I think it's going to be a successful tenure, but whether the Champions League will come, I cannot guarantee that. There's something inherently wrong with PSG.
But again, I think it is highly, there's this news going around, but again, events might have passed that one. He was tipped to take over from Didier Deschamps after this World Cup.
After the World Cup.
Exactly.
That would be interesting.
Can take both jobs anyways. It's not so difficult. Of course, Matic will be moving to Roma. Dybala, we don't know where it's going to. But
perfect destination.
It looks like he's going to be moving to Inter Milan. But Pogba is still clubless. No information.
Sorry,
about
Debo,
his job,
please.
Him joining.
Sorry, if Dybala goes to Inter Milan, what happened to Kalulu?
Kalulu will go back to
Bayern. They are chasing him out of the city.
That's the show, and that's the wrap for the show, guys. Thank you very much for.